No, I was just looking at that myself because I was trying to find, like, I remember Sigmund the Sea Monster, and on YouTube, I was only seeing clips. So I'm like, well, how do I see a whole episode? And then on Amazon Prime or somewhere, you can buy the episodes or something.
Yeah.
And I also found out they did a remake of a Sigmund the Sea Monster, like in 2016 or something. I would have thought it was.
Johnny Whitaker made a cameo in it. The original, one of the original kids. Yeah. Johnny Whitaker from Family Affair.
Yeah.
Was in it. So. Yeah.
It was Sigmund the Sea Monster. Yep.
Yep.
All he's right, also Rugrats. Yep. Yep. We were talking about none other than Sid and Marty Krofft, both of who we lost.
Well, no.
No, one's still alive, I think.
One's still alive. Marty's still alive.
But Wikipedia, which you can take.
Oh, okay. So it's Sid Krofft. I'm fucking. What am I saying? Okay. It's got them grouped together. That's the fucking confusion. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, you're right. Sid, still with us.
Yeah. God,
damn it. Okay. But he's getting up there. He's 94. Marty, we lost at 86. Man. Ah, they're two Canuck brothers.
They're two brothers from Canada.
Great scent.
Name in the early 1960s with a puppet act that they did, I think, at the World's Fair called Poops de Paris, which was a adult themed puppet act where the people dressed up as certain singers and stuff. But the main thing was the puppets were like the Folies Bergère and they were topless.
Perfect.
They got to be, it was a big success. My aunt worked with them for a little while.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah. And
so you kind of have a loose personal connection in a way, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I jumped in, you guys were talking about, like, some, Gil said somebody got them secondhand. Was it Tom who got them secondhand?
We're talking about watching him for the first time, but for like Cameron, he would have had to.
Yeah, I never. They apparently reran him on the Family Channel back in the 90s, but I just always was kind of privy to. I knew what the banana splits were, and I just would always see segments of their shows kind of syndicated on like a NBC antenna channel. And I knew about them, and I knew that it wasn't the same as, you know, Electric Company or Jim Henson, but when we covered. Jerry and Sylvia Anderson, I kind of just, it was cool to just kind of get more kind of elaboration on the details of this duo and how it was, again, it was a family business, and they did some out, much like any other TV giants, they would produce some specials, original telefilms and other live action stuff, some that didn't even involve puppets, but puppets were definitely their main bread and butter. Have a big variety show dressed up, and they're but it is awesome how I did hear their name kicked around with Donnie and Marie, but it took me years to kind of put that together.
Yeah, I kind of remember being growing up in Jersey as a kid, and Channel 11 would put on the Krofft Superstars. No, it was the Superstars.
Okay.
You hear bum, 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 bum. And we show you like H&R Puff and stuff, the Bugaloos, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters,
Dr. Shrinker.
We didn't see Dr. Shrinker on there.
It was like a block of episodes
Block of episodes they would play. And the one I got to see the most was H&R Puff and stuff. And nice. My mom actually got me, I think she got me a toy flute as a kid. You know, cause she said you could be like Jimmy now. And I was like, gee, mom, thanks. And like, you know, my little, you know, six year old brain is going, I've got a magic flute that talks, you know? And you know, but the thing
I have only one too, but I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah. That would have been a great thing, a great toy if they just got into commercializing it, you know.
Yeah.
really their first big blast into fame, HR Puffin stuff, because they had done the banana splits for Hanna-Barbera. They designed those costumes. And they decided in 69 or 70, they were going to make a movie called HR, because it was called Puffin Stuff. And they got Jack Wilde to be in it. He was still coming off Oliver, the movie wow. Oliver. And, you know, he was the cocky little kid. And he kind of reminded people of Davy Jones, too, when you think about it. The British accent, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a big hit for them. Saturday morning, that was their big hit. You know, this was, you know, where Saturday morning shows were kind of like, you know, trapped in that color of, you know, primary. This was bold, psychedelic, you know, talking trees and, you know, a dragon that's nice to you and a witch. God bless Billy Hayes for doing witchy poo, because that's the most
she's the most beloved.
I was telling my wife today, you know, so I was rewatching an episode and I'm like, man, I don't remember this. So whoever wrote this must have been high.
But then I love how they acknowledge that. They're like, yeah, we're just weird. We're not high.
For legal purposes, we are not suggesting that Sid Marty Krupp were high.
I think it was just, you know, them saying, you know, let's take a live fairy tale from the, like the Wizard of Oz or something like that, and just blow it up and give it that 60s sensibility to it. You know, I mean, where else are you going to see, you know, a character like Stupid Bat and, you know, Orson the Owl and all that, you know, I mean, it worked on so many levels.
Yeah.
And we had Lenny Wenrib, you know, the voice of Time for Timer.
And also Magic Mongo.
Also would play Magic Mongo down the road. And I was friends with his daughter till my Facebook page got hijacked. I just remember him, you know, him doing that voice. And, you know, people will recognize Puffin Stuff. You know, if anybody remembers, Nickelodeon, Nick and Knight did a thing in 95. I think October or September or something of that year, Puffapalooza. And to our generation, that was kind of like reintroducing everything to us, because you got to remember, our generation was the generation that had all those shows, you know, and they brought them back for one night.
That's lovely.
I remember watching till like 3 a.m. And then that's I went great. To bed. I had to go up to get up the next morning to go to a church thing with my friend Zolt. And I was just like so zonked out, you know, only get like 4 hours sleep. And, you know, my mom looking at me going, are you OK? I'm like, no, Mom, I want to just go right back to bed. What were you doing? Watching H&R Puffin Stuff. You were watching that? You know, like my mom would just never understand why I watched.
She wasn't a TV gal.
No, she was like, how can you fry your mind when you have, you know, chemistry homework to do for college?
Oh, like,
oh Mom, come on. You know,
maybe I want to enjoy life. Gee, I don't know.
Yeah.
The chemistry will always be there. H&R Puppet Stuff may not be.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know.
Did you know that they produced Pryor's Place, his sketch comedy show? That's awesome. Yeah. They also produced a Patti LaBelle special in 85. Yeah.
They did the Mandel Sister show.
Did you ever see DC Follies?
Yep.
Yeah.
Man. Stuff that I wish they would replay, like local PBS or Chicago Tribune type stations. You wish that they would just air this as opposed to whatever just got played, you know, a year ago, you know?
Well, the thing is that with Sid and Marty Krupp and they were always on top of something. Like when they did their second series, The Bugaloos, the Monkees and the Partridge Family were like, you know, still popular at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they got four kids in England. They did a Talis shirt search all over England. And supposedly the rumor is Phil Collins tried out for the Bugaloos.
Interesting. Yeah. I can see him actually getting along pretty well.
And it would help matters that he's exactly the same size as they would be on television.
Sorry, go ahead.
Can you imagine, like, he was the drummer for Genesis? He had a song.
And then he did this.
And what happened was that they got these four kids, and I don't know if anybody remembers when you first watched the Bugaloos, but did anybody get a crush on Joy, the female one, Caroline Ellis?
Yes.
I don't know that I can't recall if I've ever seen the Bugaloos or not. It's not bringing to mind.
I definitely did not see that one, but I can see it though. She definitely looks like a younger Susan Day.
The Bugaloos family. The Bugaloos is like this. Like there are four bugs. They live in a place called Tranquility Forest, and there's an evil woman named Benita Bazaar, portrayed by Martha Ray, who would later go on to be the spokesman for Paladin.
The
big mouth. And then she would also become Mark Harris's wife, if you remember the old Howard Stern show, My Martha. Maggie and I are very close. So they brought her in, and then, you know, she was really cool with them, the kids, you know, because she was an old timer. You know, she was a trooper.
That's and great. You know,
to bring Martha Ray on, you know, on a kids show, you know, that introduced me to Martha Ray and how funny she was. But the thing is with that is that they had an album come out, and the album, I think, hit 100 on the charts. It was a big, big push, media push with them. They were in the Thanksgiving Day Parade in Macy's. They had a sign outside of Sunset Strip, you know, for their album coming out. And it was a big deal.
And I kind of missed that kind of side promotion that was possible instead of just waiting for the suits to come in and green light you.
Yeah.
And yeah. Do you know by any chance who, like, obviously they were kind of their own independent act, and they were just getting distributed by various people from Hanna-Barbera to NBC. Who ultimately owns the rights, do you think?
I think it's the Croft.
Just Croft Estate. Okay.
The Croft Estate, because they had control of it. They had control of a lot of stuff. And from now, from what I understand, they're going to have a streaming network.
Oh, sweet. Maybe Shout Factory can get in on that and remaster some stuff.
Yeah.
I saw that they produced two movies with Bruce Stern.
Okay.
One was the comedy Middle Age Crazy. That's also got Anne Margaret. That was a Fox picture. And the second was a Western he did with Gordon Lightfoot called The Last Desperado.
Ooh. I remember Middle Age Crazy.
And if I saw these, it definitely would have been, again, just like at 3 a.m, you know, on an antenna station. But I like that kind of stuff that just everybody, there's opportunity for everybody. You can get some side money here, and then you can do another thing that a lot of people are going to see. And that's enough money to make another side deal. So they really are kind of, given how they got the Ringling Brothers origin story, it is kind of awesome to see that they literally are a live action TV literal circus, just going from one place to the next.
Yeah. And then when you think about it too, and the Bugaloos was on one season, H.R.R. Puffin stuff is on for I think one or two seasons. So they were going to do a Bugaloos movie, and from what Caroline Ellis said, they were getting prepared to do it, and they never got a call back. They went back to England, and they never got a call back.
That is wild.
And I think to do with the planning and everything like that, like what when they were going to do it. But then the next year, they put out Lidsville with Butch Patrick and Charles Nelson Reilly as who Yeah. And this is the funny thing, like, you know, how can you think of, okay, let's, okay, we've done a kid on an island with a dragon that's a sheriff with a witch. We've done a four kids who are bugs who live in a forest. Let's do this kid who falls in a magic hat and winds up in a land populated with hats with a genie, and we'll get Billy Hayes back to play Weenie Genie. But we need a villain. Who can we get? Well, we'll get Charles Nelson Reilly. Oh, how's that for a topper? And that was really cool to watch. I mean, you know, it was good. And Butch Patrick was like starting to become a teen, you know, was becoming a teen. So he'd grown out of Eddie Munster at that point. And if you ever watch the show Lidsville, Charles Nelson Reilly talks loud all the time. And they were doing dinner for five. I think I brought this up. And they said, why did you like talk loud all the time? He said, because your kids weren't paying attention. That's why. You know. And
that's awesome.
I just think about that, you know. And the thing is, Crofts were always bringing in people for us to watch that, you know, our parents watched. So
yes. Just somehow kind of, they must have had a similar booking agent, kind of like the Muppet agency, where it's just get someone who's about to become a big deal, but we can get them still ultra cheap. They'll get exposure. We'll get some ratings. It's somehow a win-win for everybody. No one gets hurt.
Well, the thing I've always said about Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, when they did that one, so we're going to 73 now, 74. They bring in Johnny Whitaker, who had just been on Family Affair. And then they bring in
Family Affair. Sorry, go ahead.
And then they bring in Mary Wilkes, who you might recognize from Sister Act. She played the older nun.
Oh, that's her. Nice.
Played the nosy next door neighbor. That's and awesome. Then when they did another season, the second season, Mary Wilkes left and Fran Ryan came in. Fran Ryan.
Oh, yes.
You'd know who she is when you see her.
And those are the kind of actors we all love here. We love these chameleons who just have been, again, clocking in on all kinds of different projects. They get famous by the time they get to the seventh stage of their career. But, you know, so it just angers me all the time when I see these actors who didn't even have to work literally a day in their life, and they're getting more publicity than all these other guys who've been around and are older than dirt. It's like,
and then like, what gets me is that second season they bring in Rip Taylor to play Sheldon, the G.
Good old Rip.
You know, and to me that's like you know, that kind of ends it for them with the kiddie stuff, because the next year they're gonna make a show about dinosaurs.
Yep.
That to me is their best show.
Lovely. That's the one I remember most.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. And can we all the theme song?
Mark and Holly on a routine expedition.
In the greatest earthquake
ever known.
on a rapid struck their
tiny raft.
Did anyone?
Oh God!
Did they play that song in the movie that Will Ferrell made?
I think they did.
They did. The Land of the Lost. Wow!
But I have to throw in a reference here. They did a great reference to it in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Will Ferrell played Marshall Willenhalley.
Yep.
I loved it in Family Guy when Peter's trying out for the play. He goes, 5, 6, 7, 8, Marshall Willenhalley. And they do they do the end part where the dinosaur screams at the camera and it's Peter going, ah.
Yeah. One thing I will say for Sid and Marty Krofft is they manage, I think their shows are based along concept that adults are big kids.
Yeah.
And kids are going to remember the cool stuff. I mean, just think about the people they brought. We've already mentioned a few people they brought back, but take a look at some of the people that were just kind of on the waning end of when they were popular, but then they got them snatched up or were just about to become popular. Wesley Uhr from Land of Lost, he was big on Days of Our Lives. Another Days of Our Lives rep.
Deidre Hall.
Electro Woman?
Deidre Hall, yes.
Electro Woman.
Yep. You had Judy Strangis, who was kind of in that same kind of boat, but they just had a knack for finding the people who were just still famous enough that people recognize them, or just finding the talent that could be there if given an opportunity or two. And who can forget Norman Alden as from Electro Woman and Dino Girl, who was also doing at the same time, I believe he was doing the voice of Aquaman.
He'd done the Aquaman, I think.
Is he the guy that played their inventor?
Norman.
No, it was Frank.
Frank, that's right.
Frank was the guy who invented all this stuff for Electro Woman and Dino Girl, and they rode around in that like dune buggy electric car.
That's funny because I was telling my wife as I was watching an episode today, I'm like, that guy sounds like he does voices for Hanna-Barbera.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And the strange thing is, Norm Alden and Lenny Wenrib were in a movie together called Good Times with Sonny and Cher. That's the first movie Sonny and Cher did together, directed by William Friedkin, just lost.
Yes. Yes.
And
I think that's why I respected him even more. He was another guy who, kind of like some of these other cool cats, just they were doing all kinds of documentaries and literal stage plays. And he apparently explained in recent years why he worked with Tracy Letts was Tracy knew him from doing opera houses. And can you imagine an alternate reality where we lose William Friedkin and all he does is direct operas no one sees? The rest of his life, that would have been sad.
Well, the thing that gets me about the Krofts is that they also gave a lot of people the push to do things. Like you said, Wesley Uhr, Judy Strangis, Michael Lembeck appears on Captain Cool and the Kongs, Deborah Klinger, Louise DeArt. I'm trying to think who else. John Anthony Bailey, who would later do adult movies, on Wonderbug.
Hey, you got to put it in somewhere.
I was trying to remember that earlier.
What was that?
I was trying to remember. I kept trying to remember on the Krofts Super Show, I think it was, or something about, and all I kept coming up with Speed Buggy. I says, that's not it. It's like a live action show.
Wonderbug.
Wonderbug. And he said it. That's it.
It's Schlepp Car when it's like the piece of crap, and it's Wonderbug when it hits the horn. I remember watching Mystery Theater, and they did Alien from L.A., and they're traveling on this dune buggy, and Mike goes, "Hey, look, it's Schlepp Car," and I was like, "Oh my god, I remember that for some strange reason," and it took me a minute to realize, okay, I get that reference, but you look at it, I mean, they were bridging. They were now getting into more live action stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the imaginary stuff was disappearing. Like if you look at Bigfoot and Wild Boy, that was kind of like bordering on.
Did they try to use the same actor who played Bigfoot in the $6 Million Man?
No, different guys. Cool. Because that was Ray Butcher. Was it Ray Butcher? I think, Ray Young, Joe Butcher played Wild Boy. But Ray Young, they had the same outfit almost for I can always look it up and see if it was the same guy, but all I remember is that Croft Super Show. You know, they were still Land of the Lost. They were running the Croft Super Show. They had Captain Cool and the Kongs. And then they did Far Out Space Nuts.
That's with Bob Denver and I can't think of the other guy.
Chuck McCann.
Yeah. Chuck McCann. Man. And I remember they did with the Far Out Space Nuts. That's the first time I think they moved from NBC, because they were doing ABC. They were doing the Croft Super Show. And I don't know if I'm trying to remember. Did it go Captain Cool and the Kongs and then the Bay City Rollers? Or was it the Bay City Rollers, then Captain Cool and the Kongs?
I want to say it was Captain Cool and the Kongs first, and then Bay City Rollers. Hmm. And we can't also forget Lost Saucer with Ruth Buzzy and Jim Neighbors.
And Horror Hotel. Billy Hayes and some guy pretending to be Charles Nelson Reilly, when the guy who was playing Charles Nelson Reilly was some guy, I didn't know who it was. I think Charles Nelson Reilly was doing like Match Game or something every other week or something like that.
It's wild that you brought up Chuck McCann. There's another guy, another chameleon.
You know, we got to bring up Ghostbusters as well by the F Troop guys.
That's right.
That was Filmation, but
it was Filmation. I'm sorry.
Oh, it was Filmation, but it was, you know, you got to think Filmation was starting to do that, you know, that crazy live action stuff, because they did Uncle Croc's Block at that. Okay, so that's what happened. He was doing Uncle Croc's Block, and I think that's why they couldn't get him to do Horror Hotel, because he was doing Uncle Croc's Block. And they kind of like, you know, never the two shall meet or something. Like, you know, that's what I look at. But Lost Saucer, I remember, because I was like, why is Ruth Buzzy and Jim Neighbors, they're two robots. And then if you look, Alice Platon was on the show, and she played one of the goblins in Legend.
Oh, damn.
That Tom Cruise movie. And I was friends with her husband, the guy who did the Joshua White, who was the guy who did the Joshua Light show for the Fillmore back in the 60s. Damn. And he became like a television producer and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that, like, Alice Platon passed away, unfortunately, at a very young age from diabetes. But she was a very talented woman. And I remember the Lost Saucer, Magic Mongo, because I also had a crush on Helene Lembeck. Don't ask me why. I just did.
Yeah. Hey, love what you love.
Joe Sperber, I've had crushes on like cute chubby chicks for a long time. Don't ask me why, I just do.
That's okay.
How much you no love kink shame in here.
Okay, all right, okay. But I kind of always see the Crofts as like the epitome of live action 70s kids TV shows. And when they started to go into variety with the Osmonds and, you know, the Mandrell sisters, and let's not forget, they did bring us Pink Lady and Jeff. You know,
someone had to.
I mean, that to me was like the beginning of the end for them, you know, because they'd done Donnie Marie and the Osmonds. I don't know if they did Captain and Tennille or not. They did the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, I think. Yeah. And to me, it was like, you know, they should have just stayed with kids television, you know, but they were looking to expand themselves. And Sid and Marty were, you know, just going along with the flow. And then they brought along DC Follies and Pryor's Place, which was like their big comeback, you know, because I remember everybody saying, if you guys remember, Richard Pryor having a Saturday morning cartoon show, a kid show.
Yeah.
What is he thinking? What are you thinking? This guy's supposed to be the dirtiest guy on, you know, a dirty comic. You know, he's a X-rated comic. Well, Pryor wanted to show he was more than just a comedian. And he did a good job doing it, you know.
Yeah.
I respect anyone who takes a chance, even if it doesn't end up successful.
I put him just equal, if not just slightly above, Bill Cosby and the Cosby Kids.
Yeah.
Because you expected Bill Cosby to be the wholesome guy. You didn't expect that from Richard Pryor. So he's playing out of type, but he did such a great job. And I still remember the opening day of Pryor's play to this day. And
What year was Pryor's Place? Because I might not have been, because I remember the show, I just never watched it. I might have been too old at the time. I don't remember.
84.
Yeah, definitely 84.
Yeah.
86, maybe at the latest. It's when CBS was starting to phase out their cartoons. It was still around when Muppet Babies were on and
Dungeons and Dragons.
It was around the time of like the Smurfs and all that.
Yeah, yeah, it was towards the end of the 80s and the mid to end of the 80s, Gil, from what I remember. And it showed you that Richard Pryor was a multi-talented person.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because I remember he played, Willie Nelson is playing with them. They're playing this song and Richard Pryor plays the sax and everybody's going, is that dubbed in? They're like, no, that's really him playing the saxophone. You know, and if anybody remembers, he had burned himself really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before that. And
there's a great Turner Classic Movies podcast called The Plot Thickens that goes into even more detail on him, his constant, you know, setting his houses on fire, his relationship with Pam Grier. It's worth a listen.
But he had a lot of people on those shows that you never would expect, you know. And I think he was trying to bridge himself out more, you know, to show, hey, look, I may be this X-rated comic, you know, who makes these great funny movies, but I can show kids that, you know, I'm one of them too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, the suits up at CBS were like, well, it's not getting the ratings we should be getting. Accent, you know,
get out of here.
And that's how, you know, that's what it is. You know, that's the thing with, if it's not getting ratings, they axe it, you know.
Happens.
But I think that was the last big gasp Sid and Marty had. And they kind of faded into the background. You know, there was, you know, they did do a remake of.
I saw that they produced a bunch of other, like, puppets for, like, whenever there was, like, a music video special or something. But that's when we would have probably lost contact. We didn't realize, oh. Yeah, you know, yeah. We would have probably thought, oh, that's someone doing a knockoff of Crofts. It's like, oh, that is the Crofts, but they're not advertising it in bold letters.
And what nobody remembers is they had their own theme park.
Yes.
In End Center was.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah. It only lasted, I think, maybe 16, 18 months. And, you know, it was pretty good for its time. But, you know, they couldn't keep up with Disneyland. And I think the rides kept breaking down and, you know, it was all this other stuff. And, you know, it was kind of like, okay, we will shut it down. And, you know, Ted Turner could build something there, you know. I think the one thing everybody can kind of remember is that they did do a remake of Land of the Lost.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah.
Not as good as the original, because
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I it looked like regular trees and ground and you know,
yeah.
It didn't look like the swampy kind of feel that the original had.
No, mm-hmm. It wasn't only that, but if you remember in the original Land of the Lost, the family dynamic was always there, you know, because. Yeah. Rick was the dad, and Rick knew what to do. Will was a little hot-headed. Holly was very, like, naive and childlike, but, you know, she kind of knew things that no one else knew about. And then as time went on, and remember, Spencer Milligan was only there for two seasons, and he basically dropped out because of the fact that they were producing all this stuff, because you got to remember Land of the Lost was the big cash cow for them.
Mm-hmm.
His likeness was on lunch boxes and trading cards. Like, they weren't seeing a dime of that. And he got mad. He's like, you know, he told the Crofts, look, if I don't see, you're paying me how much a week, but you've got my name, you know, you got my likeness on all this stuff, and we're not seeing a dime of it. And they said, all right, well, then you can go. And they brought in the guy who was the other astronaut from Planet of the Apes. Blonde.
Franciscus? Or...
No, not James Franciscus.
No, not Franciscus. No, yeah.
The guy who was on the TV show with James Norton. I know his name. It's like right on the tip of my tongue. He played Burke, and Norton played Verdon. What was his name? Damn it.
That guy.
The guy who did that one thing that one time.
Yeah. He's in a lot of TV shows too, from what I remember. Let me look it up. Hold on. Give me a minute, guys.
Now I'm thinking about Planet of the Apes TV show.
I might be mixing up my lore here, but didn't they introduce the new guy in Land of Lost as like an uncle who was trying to find them?
Yeah, he was an uncle. And the uncle passed through the time frame. Ron Harper was the uncle. Ron Harper was the uncle. That was his name. It was Uncle Bill or something like that. And all we remember is that all he says is, well, you know, Dad went through the time. Well, I was coming down the same way, and I came down the same way you did. So you guys, I must have switched places with your father, you know, and they kind of like did that. And it was like, oh, okay. Now the uncle.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Sounds
like a bad soap opera.
But the strange thing is that they actually had a guy from UCLA create the language that Chaka had, which was the Bakuni language. They had the Bakuni language. And then, like, the third season, also, Chaka could speak English. And there were more Chaka's tribe, you know. And I was like, it kind of jumped the shark at that point. But what I do remember is, you know, that was their big, that's the thing they're most remembered for. You know, the other shows you remember. Land of the Lost is the one that's always hit us in the head, you know, because it was dinosaurs. They had guys working from, like, you know, guys who were going to work for Star Wars and stuff like that. I think working on the dinosaurs and stuff like that. They had to have people like paleontologists come in and do, like, okay, this is how a brontosaurus would move. This is how a T-Rex would move. And this is how, you know, a triceratops would move. You know, they had to learn how to do all this stuff. So it didn't look like it was like, you know, shitty ass claymation. It looked like they were like real freaking dinosaurs. And they all crossed. They had the force perspective hand puppets come into play.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's what made it, Land of the Lost, so fun to watch. And, you know, when you think about it, the 70s, that whole thing was, you know, bringing the imagination to life. You know, I mean, we can do without the Bay City Rollers, but, you know, the whole thing was bringing this color and this vibe of color and vibration to life, you know, because I always look at everything and go, it's like, I kind of look and go, it was so far out to see all this stuff, you know?
Yeah. And even going back to the Bay City Rollers for a moment, I disagree. I think that the Crofts did bring that additional kind of flair to it. I mean, if you remember the quote unquote live performances,
yeah.
The backgrounds were always very bright and, you had clear boxes and lighting and different things like that, and you had fireworks. So to me, that was, I think Sid and Marty Krofft were tapping into that and also tapping into the waning zeitgeist that was the Bay City Rollers.
Yeah, And they kind of had this thing where they thought the Bay City Rollers were going to go big over in America. Because remember, Roller Mania had hit England and Europe and Australia and Japan. So they were kind of like looking at it going, okay, bring them here.
We're going to have international word of mouth kind of.
Yeah, we're going to have
another. The thing about it was that Roller Mania had hit America, but they had them when they finally brought them over for the show. That was starting to wane a lot.
Yeah.
And you're undergoing a lot of turmoil within the band. And most of the people, there's a documentary about the Bay City Rollers, and I don't think, if I'm remembering right, I don't think many of them wanted to do it, but the money was there. And out of all the ones who I think would have been the ones who really would have pushed it, would have been Les.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it was, but I will say this, even though it was kind of poorly done, there was a memorable guy, Mr. Munchie.
Yes.
Mr. Munchie made that show. Mr. Munchie was to that show what Gene Gene Dancing Machine was to the Gong Show. You knew it was going to come, but you never, and you knew it was going to happen, but you always loved it when it happened.
And the thing that gets me, though, is that they brought him over and they had thick Scottish accents. And you couldn't understand what the hell they were saying. But when you watch it again, you're like, oh yeah, it's like, oh, you know, they're it's like the Beatles, you know,
yeah.
the Beatles had those cute Liverpudlian accents. These guys were Scottish, you know, accents, but you hear it in the end. You're like, oh, okay. You know, but you got to think too, Roller Mania was peaking as punk coming along. So they were kind of getting swept out. And like you said, there was a lot of turmoil going on at that time too. Because if you watch the show, there was five they started out with, and then it goes four.
Yeah.
It's a bunch.
And it was, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Garrett's brother. Alan was the one who they brought back in, even though he wasn't really with the band anymore, but they brought him in for the show. And there was still something off about it. Now that I think back, it's like, well, the cracks were there. It was just, I was too young to really recognize it. But after that, Bay City Rollers kind of imploded and went their own separate ways, got into some legal battles with their former manager and themselves and all that good stuff.
Yeah. But and unfortunately, we've lost Les McCowan. I know Derek.
We lost Alan.
Yeah, Alan's gone. Derek, I think, is still with us.
Derek is still with us, but he went into like medicine or something like that, so he's not as much into it. Eric is still doing his own music, and it's fantastic. And Woody is actually touring with the Bay City Rollers.
Who's the one that got into legal trouble?
I think once Les passed away, and that kind of went by the wayside. But so Woody's still doing his own, and they're putting out original music. And
good. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, we need it. I'm just tired of hearing so many people who have just, you know, been kicked out of the industry. It's like not everyone can be that poorly behaved, can they?
Well, if anybody remembers, I've told the story about Pink Lady and Jeff, how that went when they saw Pink Lady as this big thing in Japan. And I think they'd had a couple hits over here. They just kind of like were in the top 50 with stuff. And they said, all right, bring them over here. And Jeff Altman, you know, he's ready to, you know, he's a comedian. He's a great comedian, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He comes over. First day they're filming, and he says, hi ladies, I'm Jeff. And the interpreter turns to them and he says something, and they say something back to the interpreter, and they say, hello Jeff. And he just goes, oh great, oh no, you know, it's kind of like going, my ship is sunk here, you know. And if you watch the show, they're all speaking in phonetic,
oh, like, geez.
Hello Jeff, yes, it is really good to see you. Like, you know, and you're like, just like, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, I remember Donnie Marie being funny because Donnie Marie, they really knew how to, like, Donnie never took himself seriously. I don't think Marie took themselves seriously. The Mandrell sisters, I still remember.
Yeah.
Because my grandmother used to watch it every Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know Barbara and her sisters were like talented musicians. Like they could really play instruments. Like Barbara can play the pedal steel. There's video for playing the pedal steel guitar. And I'm like, holy shit, you know. And, you know, I've always said they brought out a lot of great things in people, you know.
Which is good. Because you see so many other people who are kind of just milking someone to death, and you like to actually see a sense of camaraderie. Like, where, yes, this is a business, but we're all happy to be here.
But you have to think, after the 80s, you know, as I said, they kind of faded into the obscurity of, you know, what pop culture was for us growing up. And our generation, Generation X, or, you know, Baby Boomer, whatever the hell we're called, you know, we were slowly getting back to where things were, you know, like there were these little things of nostalgia and stuff like that. You know, do you remember that? Yeah, I remember that, you know. And Nickelodeon, Nick and Knight, as I said, put on that Puffapalooza thing. And the ratings went through the roof that night because everybody was watching that show. And Cameron, you said you watched it on the Family Channel. That was the next step, because the Family Channel was trying to keep pace with Saturday mornings. They said, hey, let's get the Crofts on. Let's put the Bugaloos on.
Yeah, they were.
You know, we'll put H.R. Puff and stuff on. We'll put on, you know, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. We'll put on, you know, the Lost, you know, Sprout Space Nuts and all those other great shows. You know, they, I remember they were doing the promo and they said, wouldn't it be great to be a kid again? And here I was 21 years old and I felt like I was 7 years old again, 8 years old, watching these shows coming out of, you know, CCD class, you know, and, you know, remembering the lyrics to H.R. Puff and stuff, singing them as I'm, you know, as my parents are just looking at me going, did we raise an idiot?
Oh, people just, I think your parents are kind of emulating of what seems to be the case with today's, like, media. Like, if it's not a rating success, oh, it doesn't matter. Toss it away. Forget about it. It's like, why? Someone out there saw it and liked it.
I'm sorry, Tom.
The thing about it was that the Crofts came in at just the right time for their style of entertainment. You could not do that stuff in the 80s. So when they tried to branch out into more variety shows, they had some success, but it still wasn't quite the Croft look, the Croft feel. It was just, it was like they're watering it down.
And the heyday for the variety shows was the 70s, and the 80s it started to die off a bit.
Yeah,
basically.
And the thing was that, you know, the retro movement began in the 90s, when we were all starting to look back, going, "Hey, you know, that was really cool stuff." You know, and this is what set me on my path to do what I do now, because it was like the internet was just starting to come out. And, you know, we were deep diving into these old shows.
Dial up, baby.
You know.
Yep.
And chicken in a blender.
What I remember is just sitting there, like, being in college, going through the internet, and, like, my TV, you know, I had to do a thing about, you know, famous TV shows. And I said, you know, everybody picked, like, you know, the Honeymooners or, you know, this, that. I said, well, what show could I could do H.R. Puff and stuff. I could do them something about Sid and Marty Krofft. And I said, you know, this show was popular because, and I did Land of the Lost. I said, this show was popular because A, it was something that had not been tried before, you know, stop motion animation. B, it was a continuing story of a family, a parental unit, a single parental unit, because where was mom? We never heard about mom, you know, and it was taking place in a world that was prehistoric, but yet futuristic. So it was science fiction, you know. This is something that, you know, a lot of people, you know, these two guys were stretching themselves into places we'd never been to before, you know, and the psychedelic movement. And the thing was, too, their influence was felt all over the place. I remember seeing Mr. Show in 96, where they did Sam and Criminy Croft. And they showed their show Drunkachusetts.
Yes.
It was a takeoff. And Dave Cross dressed up as Jack Wilde and did the best Jack Wilde imitation I've ever seen in my life. And the whole thing was like, you know, instead of a flute, it's a bong. And it was, you got to watch this sketch. It's the altered state of Drunkachusetts. And God bless, you know, Dave, and God bless the guys on Mr. Show for doing that, because it just brought us back to where we were, you know, and we weren't alone in this. We could see, yeah, maybe it was something to do with pot, but then you think to yourself, well, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's just the way their minds were, you know.
Well, but I just applaud anywhere for experimenting with this, because, you know, we've done other movies and shows where they were pretty much just trying to get away with, like, doing naughty stuff on primetime TV. In this case, these guys are just legit just trying to put on a show every day. It is literally a film circus. But I don't know why it's lost the time, why it's kind of word of mouth. Like, you'd have to ask your grandparents or uncle at this point, hey, you saw that? Of course I saw. It's all we saw.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, and there's Rushmore to Saturday morning shows. Sid and Marty Krofft would be up there along with Lou Scheimer.
Especially when you think of international or Canadian produced syndicated material.
Yeah, you're there. You could not, if you grew up in the 70s, you would be touched by either Lou Scheimer's work or by Sid and Marty Krofft, and even in the 80s too. But the bottom line is that Sid and Marty Krofft took and elevated the game of Saturday morning television, whether it made it so that it became part of our cultural history. And there's a reason why they tried to revamp Electro Woman and Diner Girl and Sigmund the Sea Monsters and Land of the Lost. There's a reason why they tried to do that, just because there is that's in our... Yeah, that type of memory has its tinder hooks in us. So we're always going to want to go back and say, oh, let's revisit it. And unfortunately, the remakes rarely, if ever, reach the level that we remember the shows by. Mm-hmm. I remember watching there were a couple of remakes of Electro Woman and Diner Girl. There's one I caught online that I caught. It's like, it's okay for what it is, but it's not the original. The original was over the top. It was campy. It was Batman, but with women in the roles of Batman and Robin. And it fucking worked.
Yeah, I was noticing with Electro One and Diner Girl, I watched the episode and it's like, boy, that sounds like the Batman music, but it's kind of off. Because they were even playing music that was, it was like very Batman-like, but it was not quite.
Have you guys ever noticed there's like some people that were playing, like they had Michael Constantine as the sorcerer. Michael Constantine and Judy Strangis were on Room 222 together. Yeah. He played the principal. They got Sid Haig to be on that show, I think.
Yes,
Michael Blodgett played somebody in that show who was like, Michael Blodgett, you'd remember from Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. He played Lance Rock, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. He was also in Catalina Caper. He was also Meredith Baxter Burney's last husband. And if you look at Electra Woman and Diner Girl, I think a lot of those guys from Batman wrote on that show too.
Or at least they were heavily influenced.
Yeah. And the thing is too, when they tried to do the remakes, they tried to put their own little spin on stuff. And I'm kind of like thinking, like when I saw the Land of the Lost movie, I was like, you know, it's great and all, but it's just not the same, you know.
Well, they tried to show, they threw some elements into the movie that wasn't really explored as far as I can remember.
Yeah.
On the original Land of the Lost.
I think the one thing that gets me is they had a cameo by Kathy Coleman and Wesley Uhrell in it, and they cut it. And I mean, that would have been a great cameo to see the two of them, you know, with Will Ferrell's character, you know. And the thing I loved about Sigmund and the Sea Monsters was that, now here's something I found out. When you watch Sigmund and the Sea Monsters or any of those shows, we got to give credit to the little people that did those puppets.
Oh yeah, those live action puppets. Yes. Puppeteers are my heroes.
And the guy we're leaving out is a couple people, Shannon Baird, who's still with us. Shannon Baird,
right?
And Billy Barty. Billy Barty played Sparky the Firefly, and he also was Sigmund. And the thing was, Shannon Baird said those costumes were made out of foam rubber when they did like those shows. And they'd be sweating like crazy. Because if you think, you know, you're thinking foam rubber, you're thinking, oh, it's not that bad. Those are Klieg lights they're under. And you watch Land of the Lost or anything like that, here's something interesting. Bill Laimbeer, anybody who was a basketball fan, remembers Bill Laimbeer, the dirtiest player in the NBA, was a sleestack.
So he was playing
the
type.
Yeah. But Shannon Baird said, if you wore those costumes, especially Billy Barty, they had to like, you would hear the director say, if you hear it, they would dub it. But the director would be like, okay, forward, 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 move to your left, move to your right, forward, forward. Okay, stop. Because they couldn't see, so they had to put eye slits. So if you look carefully, sometimes you can see the eye slits in the costumes.
You know, like that just adds to the fun.
The sleeve stacks, those helmets, those tops didn't fit. Like they put them over, and like somebody would be like, "We can't see anything." So the director would be like, "Okay, move slow, move slow, move slow. Put your arms up. Stop." They had to do that, you know, all mime and stuff like that, you know. But you know, we got to give credit to those people that were in those costumes for all those years.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Before they gave it up, and they were doing like, you know, Magic Mongo, and you know, and also we got to thank them for bringing back the cross, for bringing back Jay Robinson.
Yes,
Brinker.
Yeah, and Billy Barty was also his assistant.
Yeah, Hugo. Because Jay Robinson at that time was still coming back from some legal issues that he had. And he'd been doing like Bewitched, he'd done plays and stuff like that. Dr. Shrinker, he got to come back. And the thing is that a lot of people have said, you know, I remember him. He played Dr. Shrinker. A lot of people don't remember him from The Robe or Bunny Lake is Missing or Demetrius and the Gladiators. I remember him from Barney Miller when I was a kid. But I remember him most of all as Dr. Shrinker, you know.
Nice.
And, you know, that's the great thing about it. You know, they'd always bring these people in that, you know, my father would be like, hey, what's he doing on this show, you know. But that's my father's way of saying, hey, what's he doing on this show? Meaning, hey, I remember he was washed up. Now he's on this, you know. but, yeah, I mean, yeah, we got to thank the Crofts. And, you know, God bless Sid and Marty. And when you know, Sid joins Marty on the other side, That's one part of our childhood that's gone. You know. You know.
I know for a while there they were also selling like blocks of Sid Marty Krofft shows. I think they had like three volumes that it had shows everything from the Bugaboos all the way up to Magic Mongo.
That's cool.
Yeah. They were doing
forever since I've seen them, but I've always had that urge like, oh, do I pick it up or do I hold off?
Well, they did a Bugaloos box set. And they did an HR Puffin Stuff box set. And they were going to re-release like all the shows and then they just stopped. And from what I remember, the Bugaloos box set is like a whole, is a shitload of money. You know, my ex-wife was actually going to get it for me. She was like, you know, I was thinking about getting you the Bugaloos on DVD, but I was like, I don't know, you know. And I was like, if you'd gotten that for me, well, you know, don't worry about it. You know, just kind of like, you know, kicking myself in the head, you know, Jesus Christ. You know? But,
yeah, but really, how connected are you to your kidneys?
I would have been like, if you had put on I said this joke one time to somebody. I said, if she had put on the Joy costume and said, I have a surprise for you, I would have been like, okay, you know, that's a little adult here, but you know, but you know, the great thing about it was when they did the TV Land Awards, they finally gave Sid and Marty Krofft the TV Land Award, and they did all the shows together, like, you know, like the themes. Mm-hmm. So they had Barry Williams singing HR Puff and Stuff. They did the Bugaloos. They had Cyndi Lauper doing Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
Dinah Girl.
I think Barry Williams sang the Land of the Lost theme. I don't know what else they did, but if you watch it on video, Billy Hayes was, you know, past her prime, and we were wondering who did Witchy Poo. It was Mindy Sterling.
Freaking Austin Powers. Okay. Wow.
Looked like Billy Hayes, did the same accent and everything. If they were going to redo it, I would have Mindy Sterling there in a heartbeat. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And we got to remember some of these people are gone now. You know, Jack Wilde's gone. Billy Hayes is gone. You know, Jay Robinson's gone. You know, you know, a lot of people have disappeared, you know, are gone now. Mm-hmm. But that's what we remember them, you know. You know, you can say Billy Hayes was great as Mammy Yoakum in Little Abner, but nope, we remember as Witchy Poo.
True.
You know, Billy Barty.
The very fact we have people that are 30s, 40s, 50s even, and we remember this stuff. It's a testament to just how much of an impact these people have had. The shows may have only run for one season, but we remember them. We could rattle them off. We had to. Just amazing things that they were able to accomplish because they tapped into imagination. And they made it both with the kid in mind, but also with the adult side of it. It's like a live action Rocky and Bullwinkle. There's stuff that the kids are going to get, but there's some things that the adults are going to say, "Oh yeah, I get that." And yeah. I think Sid and Marty Krofft did that very well.
Totally.
And we got to think too. They did sue McDonald's.
Did they really?
Yeah, Mayor McCheese, too much like HR Puff and Stuff.
And yeah, that makes sense.
I'm trying to remember when Mayor McCheese came out.
Probably 19. God, it had to be in the 1970s.
I mean, you had Mayor McCheese and you had the burglar,
Hamburglar, Big Mac,
Officer Quarter Pound. And all I remember is like there was a lawsuit
and the McDonald's kind of gave them a couple million dollars to just shut up and, you know,
shut up, cats.
Burgers, have fun.
have fun. And they did.
And you know, it's funny too. Sid married a Playboy playmate in real life.
Hey,
nice.
He's got good taste.
He's right. Yeah, yeah. So, but the thing that gets me to this day is, like, I put something very touching. I said, you know, the more these people pass away, the more our childhood is starting to disappear. And Caroline, Bugaloo's like that, because I said, again, I just think about it, like, you know, with a lot of these people going away, you know, it's like our generation is losing the people who had the imagination.
They're losing the imagination, but I think I'm more just annoyed by how, like, who really preserves it? Like, unless you go to the Library of Congress and they're, like, doing, like, a documentary, where are you going to see this ever again? Yeah.
Well, nowadays, everything's so available. I mean, it's available for anyone to get their hands on if they wanted to. And some, you know, a lot of kids today, I'm finding out, like, my niece and nephew are into some shows that were from, like, the 60s and stuff, which surprised me. I can't remember what they are offhand right now, but I was actually surprised that they were into the shows.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get my grandnephews into this stuff because I think they'd enjoy it. Because to me, you know, I'm the wacky uncle. He's going to be 18, and the youngest one's 8. So they're kind of like, you know, they're not really into that stuff, but, you know, my grandnephews, they would be more into it because they love Bugs Bunny and they love the Roadrunner. And I said, you know, this is what Uncle Jay used to watch when I was a little kid, you know. And that's the thing my father to me, he used to be like, I used to watch this stuff when I was your age, you know. My dad, this was my dad making me watch Metropolis, you know. You know, great German expressionist cinema, and I'm 9 years old, you know. Thanks, Dad. Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, kids today need to just see this stuff to see that there's more to life than just, you know, people screaming at each other, you know, on a TV show, you know.
Yeah, tasteless reality shit.
You know, or TikTok or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things is, like, I see my niece and nephew also on the phone a lot, looking at all these little clips off of, you know, I don't know, Instagram and some of these other ones, Twitter, and their attention spans are very short.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing, Gil.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. If it's not 30 seconds, you know, they don't get. And I see it in their behavior too. Like, I'm not, you know, saying your nieces and nephews, but I'm saying I see it in a lot of kids today. The behavior is just, like, you know, it's like, oh, it's not.
Well, like you said before, there's zero interaction, and it's just like, well, why even be bothered to be human if you just can't even, like, acknowledge each other in the room?
Yeah, but the thing of it is that's one of the reasons why when I see certain things that are coming up on physical media, I pick them up so somebody will always have
they won't be lost to time. Won't have to wait for them to pop up on eBay. I've been getting all the rare Indiana Jones books. Some of them are going for like 42K. I'm like, get the hell out of there.
Yeah. But to the point, to JJ's point, as long as there are people who will remember it, people who will seek it out, people who will talk about it with the love and passion that we've done tonight, if not more, these shows will never fade completely away. They'll be
used over time
like a watercolor, but...
There's always going to be somebody seeking it out.
Exactly. There's a reason why I still love shows like Space Academy. It's because I remember them from when I was a kid. I remember how they made me feel and how cool it was. So that now that I have a physical copy of it and some of the other shows to go along with it, it's like I can go pop those in at any time and relive that childhood. And even with the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff, to bring it full circle again, their messages were wholesome. There were bits and pieces that could be subversive, but on the whole, everything they did was as squeaky clean as they could make it. It would still be true to their vision, and that's something you don't get today.
Well, here's something that I always found interesting was that this is a story I heard Bob Denver talk about. They were filming Far Out Space Nuts, right? And Bob Denver was a trained actor, and Chuck McCann is there, and they said, who's the villain this week? And they said, well, it's somebody, I don't know who it is. We're gonna look it up. And they got John Carradine to be on the show.
Really?
Oh,
John Carradine, nice.
Night train for Far Out Space Nuts.
Bob Denver was awestruck, because here he was, John Carradine, the guy who had played Preacher in Grapes of Wrath, who had played Dracula, who was in the Ten Commandments, we know he did those shitty movies for like, $10,000, and all that.
And everybody.
Stuff. But
$10,000 and all the whiskey he could drink.
But it's John Carradine. And all I remember is like reading about it, like Bob Denver was like, yeah, I was like awestruck. I couldn't even talk to him for like 5 minutes, because they were bringing in people that were like really good, they may have been past their prime a little bit, but it was introducing them who they knew, And the thing with Sid and Marty Krofft, like you said, they're going to be on that Mount Rushmore of kids. It's going to be Lou Schleimer and don't forget Norm Prescott.
Absolutely. You got
to go Sid and Marty Krofft, Hanna-Barbera, and Ruby Spears. Yes. Those are the big four in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Praise Freeling and all those, but
Sid and Alex Marty. Alex Toth.
What was that?
Alex Toth.
Alex Toth and
Alex Toth. Yeah.
Iwo Takamoto? Was it the other guy? Alex Toth will always be the guy who designed everything. But like we've said tonight, that's what makes Sid and Marty Krofft so great. It was the imagination. It was a time where the 70s were just getting out of the turbulent 60s into the 70s. Things are changing. We're all changing. We all got it secondhand, from syndication and whatnot. And, I'm just happy they came along, and God bless Marty and God bless Sid. They were the brothers who changed TV,
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm glad we're having these kinds of chats, because this is kind of cool to just always remind people, hey, these guys exist, but it's not in your minds. It's not. And when I started this podcast, I never wanted to just have it be, oh, what did you see lately on streaming? It's like, bullshit, that'll already be outdated by the time that comes out. But why not talk about something that mattered and let the passion just shine? And with these Krofts, obviously the passion shined for them, and many people, they got it. They loved what they saw and they wanted more. And as you noted, obviously there were some that didn't hit off, but they still found some kind of audience, as opposed to just being unintentionally trashy or, downward spiral of failures. It's like, no, these guys pretty accomplished, lots of side hustles, lots of lesser seen and mostly seen stuff, but still a big important pop culture magnet.
You guys have to watch the remember these two Saturday morning previews?
Yes. Oh,
fun time.
The Crofts did one with Jimmy, with Jimmy Osmond. You know, little cute little Jimmy Osmond.
Yes.
And it's the Croft puppets doing it, doing the show with him. And you know, I'm afraid he's like Godzilla in Japan. Jimmy Osmond puppets. I'm afraid he's going to crush them or something like that. And you know, Jimmy Osmond, I don't think he's doing too well now these days health wise. But it's amazing to watch that they NBC gave them carte blanche to do this Saturday morning special. You know, and
I'm seeing that NBC kind of highlighted a lot of their stuff.
And what amazed me is, like, you know, the Crofts, once they were done with NBC, they went to ABC, they went to CBS. You know, I think NBC kind of gave them the launching point and said, okay, you take it from here, we'll just watch. Mm-hmm. You know,
and CBS was just like, we just need something on the mornings for now.
Yeah. I remember Far Out Space Nuts being on like I've been reading all the old, like, Saturday morning cartoon, you know, slots when they were advertising them in comic books and stuff.
Another missed opportunity now, where you read the paper or you read a comic just to get an ad for some other medium.
I mean, I just remember looking at that stuff going, man, that was a great time to be, you know, a kid. You know, to see, like, Shazam and Isis and, you know, Far Out Space Nuts and Junior, you know, You Asked For It, that stuff. You know, I'm like, geez, you know.
I used to try to hide out in our laundry room on Friday nights because I wanted to be up first thing when the cartoons would start every morning on Saturday.
Where did you sleep in the laundry room?
I took a stack of comic books and I would read comic books for 6 hours or so in the laundry room, hiding from my mom because I couldn't be in my room and read comic books because she'd see the light. So I would go to the laundry room, I'd hide, and I'd read comic books all night until cartoons would start in the morning. Then I'd come out in the living room, and my mom could never understand why I was falling asleep around noon.
Wow.
Gil, I got comic books when I was a kid, and, you know, my mom and my grandma and my dad loved it that I read comic books because, you know, I could tell you who the Green Arrow was and all that stuff. And you know, my mom was always like, you know, I'd always bring my comic books out and she'd be like, okay, you got to put them back, because if you don't put them back, I'm throwing them out. But my mom was, my grandmother would always, like, be like, I got a surprise for you when I was out. And I'd be like, what is it? She said, I got you this. And it was, like, you know, Captain America or, you know, Spider-Man or something like that, you know. And now, like, from the stuff from the 70s, I'm like, oh my God, it's like a dated time, you know. I'm looking at, you know, the Shroud of Turin, or, you know, the
Shroud of Batman.
The Code of Hammurabi. You know, these shows that the Crofts did, and all these were our little totem, you know, our little escapes till we had to go back to school.
I knew people who learned how to read by just reading comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my uncle loved. And my mom would be, you know, worried about, you know, comics rotting my brain. And I remember my uncle talking to her one time and says, what are you worried about? He's reading.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a better spelling and vocabulary than anybody in my class because I read comic books.
Oh, yeah.
Stan Lee alone would teach you the wonderful world of alliteration.
Oh, come on. I learned more about how to speak properly from my mother sitting me down at like 10 o'clock in the morning after Sesame Street and having me watch Shakespeare so I could lose my, because I don't speak with a Jersey accent. Everybody thinks I'm from like Minnesota or like Iowa or something like that. I mean,
thing I've noticed, and people think because you're from somewhere, you must have them.
Do people from Iowa have an accent?
I do have the accent.
I've never noticed it.
I was an accent. It's the no accent.
Yeah, there you go. It's just one of the other inner cities. Yeah.
Anyway, if you're going to Minnesota, you gotta have this kind of accent, don't you know?
Yeah, bring it to the pass and wear something warm.
Yeah, don't forget to say hi to Ola, to Lina and Oli too. Make a hot dish to pass. We love the casseroles. We love the spam. And if you go fishing, yeah, you gotta go up in the big lake.
Yeah, the crappies are biting this year. You know they really are. And the Luvian sketch, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gents, we've been pulling all the strings here, but hopefully we filled in the gaps on different kinds of entertainment, different kinds of formats, different kinds of experimentation. Moving along.
All right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you are.
Oh. All right.
I'm not a crook. All right.
Yeah.
You are correct. You are correct, sir.
Yes. Gil, Tom, Jay, always good. Just going back and forth and just circled around. And I was just glad we finally got to do this. It just sucks that it happened after we lost one of them.
Yeah.
You know. But I'm just glad that there's a big impression on it. It's kind of almost as legendary, I guess, as other crowds that are just now getting into, say, something like Hammer Horror or Universal Monsters. It's just, if you go to enough kind of like museums or read enough film history, eventually someone's going to know that. But
yeah,
like you guys say, I am a little worried about older entertainment being harder to find, because it keeps getting pulled after a while, even though there's plenty of people restoring stuff.
I think YouTube was a good repository for a lot of old stuff.
It really was. Yeah. But yeah, every once in a while, I'll see one of those channels go kaput, and it'll be another year before I see them get re-uploaded.
Yeah.
Oh.
They can't delete hard copy.
Yeah, it is true, too. Keep collecting those tapes.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.